So the upstreaming is still not working, not completed. So I have the privilege to go on myself. And even so, my topic is religious liberty for all. This "for all" with the question mark, of course, is a follow-up of our topic, Islam. So I also could say religious liberty for all except the Muslims, question mark. I'm very, very glad that we have the message here that we will not win over Muslims for faith in Jesus Christ if we follow a political program, if we get our governments to keep the Muslims out or send the Muslims away or through political means. And I would like to start with some experiences my wife and I have when we are talking about Islam. One story that came up to my mind actually tells more how you should not do it. We have an Institute of Islamic Studies of the Evangelical Alliance, which my wife heads up, and one day we got a phone call by the pastor of a cathedral, of the cathedral in Wetzlar, a city in Hesse, who obviously was not an evangelical and had a big problem. Seven Turkish young girls came along and they said they had a dream and they saw the picture of cathedral and were told to get a Bible there. So they went to the cathedral and the poor guy there didn't know what to do. So he looked up in the telephone book and saw there's a Protestant institute on Islam, so they probably will know. So his question was, may I give them a Bible? Or is this offensive to them? And my wife was very wise. She didn't get into a discussion about this topic, but she said, well, if they ask for them, it has been their choice. And, I mean, you shouldn't interfere. If they want to get to know the Bible and get to have their own picture. And at the same time, I was on the phone on another line already trying to reach people in Wetzlar because I knew that, sorry to say this, but liberal cathedrals normally don't have Turkish Bible lying around. So I was phoning friends in Wetzlar. And we told them, well, could you bring seven Turkish Bibles over to the cathedral? The girls are waiting there. So my wife told the man on the phone, just wait a minute, in about 15 minutes, somebody will come along. But that is, for me, a typical picture of what happens in Europe very often, that because we do not believe in our own faith, we are not able to cope with Muslim faith. And so we rather discuss the question, isn't it offensive to give them a Bible? Then my wife once was invited by the mayor of a city, of a major city in Germany, to speak on Islam. It was a political topic. The boards of the different mosques of the city were present. And so, of course, she did not evangelize, but spoke about the political side of the issues in Germany, multicultural society, etc., etc. The next day, she found herself as headline in the local newspaper. And the headline was something she never had said. The headline was by a secular journalist, not a Christian, not a Muslim, just very secular man, and he probably had understood better what my wife wanted to say than many evangelicals listening to her. His result was, not Islam, but the condition of the Christian churches are a threat to Europe. I mean, that is what you said, and I think that's the real situation we have. Not the Islam is a threat. If we would have vibrant, vital churches, if we would what we are supposed would be, if we are, what we are supposed to be, Islam wouldn't be a threat. I often discuss this when the question comes up whether Turkey should become a member of the European Union. I mean, give me 1,000 totally dedicated missionaries and led Turkey into the European Union. And 10 years later, they beg for getting out again, because 1,000 missionaries serving God, dedicated to the love of Jesus Christ, can do much more than Turks moving to Europe. Is that true? We have a very secular news magazine, similar to the Time magazine in Germany, Spiegel. And it opened up this year by a large article, Islamists versus Evangelicals. And they, to our amazement, they said the most important question for the future is whether Islamism or evangelicalism will win. They say these are the most vital religious movements in the world. I mean, I'm convinced it's a little exaggerating. They, for example, said that the evangelicals were doing all the mission and the Catholic Church would be standing on the side as referee and commenting what the evangelicals do. I mean, if you have been in Africa, that's not the whole story. But nevertheless, I mean, they put it to this side, and they said that means that two movements more and more go against each other, which could not be more different. On the side of the Islamists, you have a religious movement that has more money than any religious movement ever had in history. We are talking about billions of money. While on the evangelical side, nobody really knows how do they finance all of this. I mean, that's the true story. Yeah. On the one side, you have the most violent religious movement in the world. On the other side, you have the most peaceful religious movement in the world that never has been involved in any terrorist activity, in any violent revolution, et cetera, if you go back into history. And they went on to put all this history. The interesting thing is that the magazine in the end said, in the moment it looks as if the evangelicals will make the race. Even so, nobody knows why. By the facts, they would have to lose. Why do I mention this? I think that there is a real danger among us evangelicals and among Christians in Europe to fight Islam with a Muslim mindset. To pay back to Islam what they do to us or give to us, and be remembered, my main job is working for persecuted Christians, so I could fill the whole day with bad, bad stories, what Muslims do to Christians. And the program we have is sometimes hate. As good Christians, we don't show this always, but often in personal discussions, you can feel how much emotions there are. It is calling for the state. The state should do something. Many evangelicals in Germany are convinced that the situation we have is the state's fault. And sometimes I have to remind them that the marriage of homosexuals we have in Germany did not come from the Muslim side. They didn't invent it. They didn't ask for it. That was done by ourselves. And most of the big problems we have in Germany were done by ourselves. We didn't need Muslims for them. Breakdown of the family, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the fault of the Muslims. But it's the call for the state. That really is totally un-evangelical. Not by might and not by power. Don't misunderstand me. God has ordained the state for certain things. And if Muslims use violence, the state has to go against it as he has to go against the violence of everybody. I'm not talking about this. But yesterday I had a discussion with somebody in Germany who wants to start a new political party, and most of the program is how to cut down Islam. And I ask him, well, I say, the biggest problem of Muslims in Germany is that they have so many children. That's our biggest problem. If they would have no children, we just would wait. Yeah. Well, again, this is not the problem of the Muslims. It's the problem of the Germans because they do not have children. Yeah. But take for the moment the Muslim. What should the state do? Should the state forbid Muslims to have children? Or perhaps do what they do in China? Muslim families from now on only may have one child. Yeah. And even if the state would make a law that Muslims shouldn't have children, how are you going to enforce this? Do you want to take the third child of every Muslim and put it by force in a Christian orphanage so that the number of Christians will be on the rise? I mean, the real problems we are talking about are problems the state cannot solve. I just had a member of parliament in Germany who said, we should give the evangelicals millions of dollars to evangelize the Muslims. He's not a Christian politician. I said, how that? He said, well, the problems of Islam in Germany would be solved if the Muslims no longer would be Muslims. And the only people in the world who know how to make a Muslim into a non-Muslim are the evangelicals. So we give you money, you make them all to be non-Muslims, and the problem is solved. Well, I had to tell him to get a lot of money is not good for evangelicals. I assume if we would get billions of money, we would have a lot of ideas what to do with it and would not have any time left over to evangelize. Yeah. So, sorry for that. Jeff is angry because he said that could finance the Congress here, but I didn't take the money. There is a very, very sad story about ourselves. On the one side, in Germany, many evangelicals are engaged in politics when it comes to Islam. When it comes to evangelism among Muslims, you won't see all those people. And it's a very, very sad story. 3 months ago, I was invited by a huge Pentecostal church in Germany, which really is doing a lot of evangelism. Evangelism is music, evangelism here and there. And they phoned me and said, We elders studied our church and we suddenly found out that we're doing probably more than any other church in Germany, but nothing among Muslims. Could you come along and preach and tell us why? A good question, yeah? I shall tell them why they don't anything. And of course, the interesting question is, what Bible text do you know if you want to preach about Islam and that you should reach Muslims? That was not their concern. But I started out with two statistics, very new statistics. Number one, there was a poll among Muslims in Germany. What they would expect from Germans or from the German government. Top on the list, 91%, was we would like to be invited by a German family. They didn't ask for money, they didn't ask for political influence, they didn't ask for this and that. 91% just wanted to be invited by a German family. So that's a question of hospitality. So I took another poll among German groups that found out that the only group that still thinks that hospitality is of high value and really practices it are the evangelicals. We still love hospitality. We practice it internationally. When we are traveling, we know we can live with our fellow brothers and sisters. So I said, the only group in Germany that could fulfill this are the evangelicals. We still like to invite other people. And we have about as many evangelicals in Germany as we have Muslims. So I said, if tomorrow every evangelical family would invite one Muslim family, it would be a little complicated so that one Muslim family doesn't get 20 invitations and others don't. We would have to organize this. But I mean, if every evangelical family would invite a Muslim family, Tomorrow, every Muslim family would have visited a German home. And of course, when Muslims visit you or you visit Muslims, it's very easy for evangelicals because Muslims have two topics they like to talk about, God and family. The only group in Germany that still talks about God and still talks about family are the evangelicals. Yeah? So if they meet, I mean, if we invite Muslim families over, we never think about what we should talk about. We just sit there and that's it. I tell my students always to go into a taxi, and when there's a Muslim taxi driver, and it's 80% or so in Germany of the taxi drivers are Muslim, and they see a picture of the family around, to ask the Muslim taxi driver, don't you think that it is very difficult to teach children how to pray in such a society which hates God? And all the students that do it end up in a long discussion about God and the family. And I tell them, test this with a German taxi driver. Yeah? Well, you better don't text it. Either he will run into the next tree. He will be so shocked. Yeah? Or he will drive you to a hospital and say he is an insane man talking nonsense. Yeah? With Muslims, you can talk about this. So, but is there not a certain truth in that we have the truth and Islam is so totally wrong that we should use all means, including politics and whatever we get, to fight Islam? I think the secular journal Der Spiegel is right. From our identity, from our message, from all we stand for, we have no chance to use the means of Islam to propagate the gospel. It's impossible. We would have to use violence, we would have to use money, we would have to bribe people, we would have to misuse the state to evangelize on our behalf. And I tell you, we don't have any authority for this, and it doesn't work. And if you don't believe it, look into European history, where we have a long, long history where people didn't have another choice than to be Christians. And look to countries where there never was this pressure to be Christian because you were born Christian. And you will see that it didn't help us a lot, that most people in history in our continent were forced to be Christians, didn't have another choice. But what is the real story behind it? I think the real story behind it and the real identity of the evangelical movement, you can see if you look at the World Evangelical Alliance and how it started when it was founded in 1846. There were four topics that were vital at that time. One was unity among the Christians to spread the gospel. And that has stayed with the evangelical movement ever since. Only when we stand together we can reach this world for the gospel. We need unity. Number two, mission. Evangelical movement has been a mission movement, is a mission movement, and I hope it will stay a mission movement until Jesus comes. Then there was the topic of slavery, which stood for all that came later. Today we have the Micah movement and other things. The evangelical movement from the very beginning was working on behalf of people which at other times they would evangelize. So evangelicals would say you have to evangelize the Muslims, but at the same time, when a Muslim was a slave, say that is wrong and help him to get free. Working for everybody. And number four, religious freedom. That was a core program from the very beginning, the first religious movement in the world that made religious freedom its program. That has a long story. I will tell in a minute. I will not tell it long, but in a minute. Why this was on the agenda of the World Evangelical Alliance. But many people think that this agenda is a mixed thing. It doesn't work. You cannot be for mission and at the same time for religious freedom. You cannot say it is the most important thing is that people get saved and at the same time make their condition here on earth and how they live the center. You have to choose. We are convinced we do not have to choose. Mission and religious freedom always have been two sides of the coin in the evangelical world. And we have to stay with this, even under the threat of Islam. Why are there two sides? That goes to the heart of the matter, what we think how you become a Christian. Evangelicals believe that to become a Christian means that with your deepest heart you put all your inner trust and your inner faith on Jesus Christ and what he did on the cross. And this is something you cannot force. This is something we do not have under control. We can preach, but we cannot make people to become Christians. We have an ethic code for mission that is prepared among Vatican, World Council of Churches, and World Evangelical Alliance. For 8 years we have been debating and we are near to the close. And at the beginning everybody had to say why he is against using violence in mission, against bribing people in mission, etc., etc. And the others had to give a lot of arguments. For us evangelicals it was very, very simple. I just said a forced conversion is no conversion. If I pay somebody to become Christian and he only becomes a Christian because I paid him, I didn't achieve my goal. He didn't become a Christian. That is the heart of our identity, that you are not a Christian because you look like a Christian, but because you trust in Jesus Christ. So if we want to win over the Muslims, we need to do it in a way that they put all their trust in Jesus Christ. All other ways will not work. All political ways, all ways using force, all ways of hatred, all ways of using unethical means will not work. The Spiegel is right, even so he does not understand why, that it is this matter of love and trust that wins over Muslims, but that means at the same time that we have to be for religious freedom to assure that everybody who says no to us can do this in total freedom. We have heard Os Guinness on the freedom of conscience. That is an absolute must for us. If God himself allows people to think what they want, how in the world do we want to have the authority to punish them for what they think? God can do that. But he didn't give us any authority. He gave us the authority to preach the truth. But he didn't give us a bit of authority to punish people if they do not follow the truth. We might cry, we might pray. But we have to accept it that this human being has to make his or her own decision. That is the heart of our conviction of religious freedom. I openly say that in principle, there is no religious freedom because at the last judgment day, people will find out there never has been religious freedom. But they are responsible to the Creator, to God, and they will have to answer to him. But they have to answer to God, not to us. We have no authority to do more than present the gospel, to discuss it, to have an intellectual debate, to explain them, to testify, to put all our heart into them and say, live with Jesus and you will see that he is the truth. But beyond this, we don't have any responsibility and any authority. So we could say, but the state, well, prove to me with only one verse that the state has the task to preach the gospel in our place. The state doesn't have the task to preach what people have in their conscience, their religion, etc., etc. If in Europe again the state would start to preach the gospel and to propagate Christianity, we would not have less problems but more problems we have anyway. Yeah. So let's stick to what we are and love the Muslims, put to them that we want to trust that we just trust Jesus Christ, that they should trust Jesus Christ. But let us not use a Muslim mindset to combat Islam. We only will win over Islam with love, with preaching the gospel, with testifying, and assuring those other people that we love them and we do not hate them, and that this is even more true for our Lord Jesus Christ.